Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I like to win. You know, I love running routes.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Looking forward to facing your mom at some point.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
Because I know there's some guys that are like, oh, no, you know, I'm sticking to my diet. Well, I'm going to plan. I'm going to plan to make sure that I can have a plate.
It's Tuesday, December 6th, and the waiver wire is surprisingly frisky for this late in the season, probably because there's a lot of injuries. It feels like injuries are piling up around the NFL. It feels like week 13 was particularly brutal, but that's always the case this time of year. I'm not going to act like that's anything unique or anything interesting. What is interesting is the man that I have here beside me digitally to recap the waiver wire, to talk all things news, everything you need to know right now. It's the Sultan of scrambling quarterbacks, Andy Behrens. Andy, Sultan, that feels pretty good.
Oh, that's a huge upgrade. I think I was a peasant like a minute ago, and this is a meteoric rise to Sultan, so that's awesome. Can I just tell you that I hate week 14 buys? Like,
yeah, pretty aggressive. I mean,
that's just really cruel. Like, six teams out in week 14, and it also happens to coincide with like one of the worst injury weeks of the year. So this is bad. I got some teams that need some reinforcements, and the names could be better. It's not quite as bad as last week, but it's pretty bad.
Also, by the way, they're like, this is kind of hit or miss in terms of like teams we care about, right? Like the Falcons, the Bears, obviously why you're the Sultan of scrambling quarterbacks is your boy Justin Fields, obviously. They're on by the Packers, though. They've given us some life. The Colts, they've got some dudes we care about. The Commanders, definitely dudes we care about.
And yeah.
The Saints, I mean, there's two, right? I mean, if you care about Kamara, I don't know, he's probably tearing it up on Monday Night Football as I'm saying this, but, you know, not going so great for you. But still, there's some dudes there, and six teams is a lot.
Oh, it's a ton this time of year. And with the exception of Atlanta, like maybe you were already looking for reasons to send every Atlanta player to the bench. I get it. But everybody else has somebody who's an actual star, regardless of how their seasons have gone. Like you're counting on, like I'm planning to lean on Justin Fields in a handful of leagues. People are leaning on Christian Watson, right? Like even the bad teams right. have stars. So this is just rough timing. This is a brutal week.
Yeah, very unfortunate timing. All right, before we get to the waiver wire and hopefully uncover some guys that can help you out during this week 14 bye apocalypse. I'll call it a bye apocalypse simply because of the timing. Not that there's any good time to have an apocalypse, but certainly not good timing here in week 14. We do have to get to a few pieces of news items here on Monday afternoon. Ravens head coach John Harbaugh says Lamar Jackson, he's dealing with a knee injury, is unlikely to play in week 14 against the Steelers. You know, when Harbaugh said his injury is days to weeks, I'm like, okay, well, that means weeks. he's definitely not playing this week. Andy, obviously, one of your quarterback recommendations is Tyler Huntley for the waiver wire, which I totally understand. However, I talked about this with Scott last night. Like Lamar Jackson was the one relatively interesting thing, and even he wasn't producing up to standards. We know the lack of touchdown stats has been floating around since week four. He was the one relatively interesting thing about this completely uninteresting offense. Now you're telling me like Tyler Huntley's going to take over an offense that is giving DeSean Jackson real reps, giving Kenyon Drake real reps. I'm kind of thinking no thanks to basically every Baltimore Raven rest of the way.
All right. I mean, when you frame it that way, it seems a little bleak. Part of the reason to have still had optimism for Jackson and for Baltimore's offense generally was going to be the series of games that they had available down the stretch, right? It's you look through the end of the fantasy season. It's Pittsburgh, it's Cleveland, it's Atlanta, and then it's Pittsburgh again. So these are all exploitable matchups, you know, some of them friendly against the pass, some of them friendly against the run. You don't really like with Lamar, you don't like whatever he can do whatever is necessary. Huntley's a little bit the same way. And I don't even have like a lot of quarterbacks though. I got like two guys in our working document for this podcast that I actually feel okay about recommending for the week ahead. Huntley is one of them because he took four starts last year and in every game he had at least 40 rushing yards. A couple of those games he had 70 plus rushing yards. You know, it was 41 and a touchdown just this past week. So like the rushing stats absolutely going to be there. The defensive matchups ahead are not intimidating. So it's, you know, this was going to be like, I'd had Lamar in a bunch of leagues. I'm sure other people out there have Lamar. The Ravens obviously have it's a bigger issue for the Ravens than it is for me in my fantasy portfolio, obviously. But like this next month was going to just be spectacular. Like you'd come through some, you know, some bumpy weeks, but this was the stretch that was supposed to be really great for Lamar. So bummer to see, because he's obviously one of the league's most exciting players. I don't know what percentage to put on Huntley. Is he, I don't know if he's 80% of Lamar. I don't know how to do that math. Scott is always better at throwing out percentages than I am, but there is some appeal to the fantasy profile in large part because we know we're going to get some rushing stats out of him.
Totally. And that's fair. I just think he's going to have a lot of passing lines that look exactly like what we got week 13 100%. Against the Denver Broncos, you know, 187 yards, 5.8 yards per attempt, because I think what was different, I mean, what's clearly so different about this year versus last year is like last year when Tyler Huntley, like all those splits about Mark Andrews going around, you know, like Mark Andrews was awesome last year. I don't think Mark Andrews has played as well this year as he has last year. And obviously he's been dealing with injuries, but also like Rashad Bateman was a part of the offense back then. Marquise Brown was a big part of the offense, obviously, back then. And now it's like, we're talking about Devin Duvernay and DeMarcus Robinson are the clear-cut one and two receivers here. And that is a huge, huge problem for this team.
Oh, it's an enormous problem. Like, spoiler alert, I do not have DeMarcus Robinson on this list again this week. I'm just not, like, I know that volume sometimes flows his way, but I mean, I agree with you. I don't really see any possibility of, like, a three-touchdown game in this offense. So they're going to have to win in low scoring games where, you know, that probably look a lot like the win in week 13. Right. And hopefully Lamar is back relatively soon.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Bad timing for Lamar in the middle of his contract year. Although not that it matters, like he'll either get paid by Baltimore or he'll get paid by somebody.
It's clearly not going to be a, you know, hopefully I don't jinx this in some way, but it doesn't seem like it's a catastrophic injury. It doesn't seem like it's going to be, you know, even if it's a multi-week injury, it doesn't seem like it's something that's absolutely going to cost him the playoffs or the season. So this doesn't feel like something that drags into 2023 and we have to worry about it, or the team that signs him has to worry about it moving forward.
You know, just last note on the Ravens, it's hilarious that their, you know, now longtime offensive coordinator Greg Roman is, you know, interviewing for the Stanford job, being considered for the Stanford head coaching job. And it feels like just about every Ravens fan is like, good luck, Greg. We're really rooting for you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure what Tank's read on that is. I haven't heard his perspective on Roman as a potential hire, but yeah.
I mean, we should have asked him on Sunday. It feels like a great fit though, like, you know, old Stanford guy. I mean, that's what he's great at. He's an awesome run game designer. It just, these passing games always go incredibly stale in, you know, in within like 2 years, like the first 2 years, good stuff you build around that scrambling quarterback, and then 2 years later, like, the two guys are running into each other because the route concepts don't make any sense. That'll work in college. I just feel like I feel like it'd be a great fit. I feel like it'd be a great fit for Stanford.
Also seems pretty clear to be an offense in which like the game's best receivers don't necessarily want to play. Right. So like attracting free agent talent is probably, I mean, I'm sure people would be interested in playing with Lamar Jackson, but perhaps not in the current version of the Ravens passing game.
Yeah. And it just, Roman is a guy that is just going to do enough, because again, his run games are great, like the design of his run games are really good, and unfortunately we've just been dealing with like absolute goofball talent the last 2 years at the running back position, you know, and a lot of injuries as well, injuries causing the emergence of the goofballs. Like, his run game designs are really, really good. It just, this is exactly what happened in San Francisco, this is exactly what happened in Buffalo, and it's just the Ravens have held on so long because I think Roman, again, has just enough to keep him around. This would almost be like, because I want to see Lamar Jackson in a different offense, in a different design offense, just as, you know, it's one of those things, right? Like, we'll talk about Tua here in just a second, but like, I wanted to see Tua in a different offense than whatever the hell the Dolphins were doing the past couple of years to figure out more about him. We figured out more about him this year. I'd love to run that same experiment with Lamar Jackson. So we shall see.
If somebody produces a retrospective, a look back at the Ravens 2022 seasons, Emergence of the Goofballs would not be the worst name for it. I'll say that.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that, right? Like, DeMarcus Robinson gets cut from the Raiders, doesn't make their roster. The Raiders are rolling out Mac Hollins with a serious face every single week, and DeMarcus Robinson is like the most important outside receiver for this Ravens.
I mean, they've got like the whole Raiders discard pile here. We've got Kenyon Drake here. We've got DeMarcus Robinson. It's fantastic.
Keelan Cole will be their number one receiver next year. So enjoy that, Ravens fans. All right. I mentioned Tua. I wanted to talk a couple things about the Dolphins here. The Dolphins placed right tackle Austin Jackson on injured reserve. He missed the Week 13 game against the San Francisco 49ers, along with left tackle Teron Armstead. Miami is reaching the point of their season where they're signing former number one overall pick Eric Fisher. Not a fun point of your season to reach. I want to kind of just have a conversation, use this to have a conversation about Tua. Because obviously he's been a polarizing player. He's a fun guy to talk about, fun guy to discuss. And I wrote in my Care Don't Care recap piece that, like, okay, we don't need to sit here and say, like, all right, Tua did not perform well against the San Francisco 49ers defense. That defense was awesome. That's the book on him. We were, like, the haters were right all along about Tua. I think that's silly. But it certainly can be, like, I think we're still in the discovery phase of finding out, like, Tua's obviously good, but how good is he type of thing. How much does these offensive line injuries, because, you know, two tackle injuries, certainly problematic, especially Austin Jackson going to miss 4 weeks now. Does this change your thoughts about the Miami passing attack from just like a ceiling perspective? Because we know these guys are good players. But again, it's a how good are they?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a ding, right? Right tackle for a left-handed quarterback is a thing. That is a little bit of an issue. It seemed going into the week that his injury was a little bit more serious, obviously, than Armstead. So, it's super unfortunate. They are coming off a tough game. I thought it was, you know, if it was a litmus test at all, it's because, you know, if you're in the AFC, you've always got, you've kind of got the Chiefs hanging over your head. You've got Buffalo hanging over your head. You know that you're going to get in games where, you know, you're going to face frisky defenses and you're still going to have to put up points. And like the Chiefs put up a huge number on the Niners, right? And like that's what the elite offenses do. And so it kind of, maybe it told you that you're not quite there. I will say it's not like some of the most successful passing plays in Miami's offense are not like slow developing plays, right? Like,
yeah,
Tua has been so good on short stuff, on intermediate stuff to receivers that are fundamentally uncoverable. So I don't think it's a disaster. I don't think it's ruinous. We'll learn some things against the Chargers in what should be a really fun matchup. It's bad though. You know, again, he was a left-handed passer and he lost his right tackle. And that's about as bad as it gets in terms of offensive line injuries.
Yeah. You're so right that like there's not a lot of slow developing plays, stuff like that. Like it's insane that Tua averaged like 11 air yards per attempt yesterday, but still had like a 2.4 time to throw, like getting the ball out fast and still taking shots, which I do think it was great to see him still taking the shots because he was obviously bothered by the pressure. He made mistakes under pressure. There's no doubt about that. The 49ers have a great defense, though. Like, this is one of, like, I don't think we should act as if when a great defense goes and puts a great offense in a blender that it's like, oh, well, that just, something happened to the offense. Yeah, what happened to the offense is they played a badass group of guys there in San Francisco, right? So I think that things can look better for Tua. I was encouraged, though, that he was continuing to, like, push the ball down the field. Getting it out fast, all the type of things that we're used to with him. Like, again, I don't think this was a huge referendum game on Tua, but it's just where this offense is at right now.
They had some terrible moments that were not really on Tua, right? Like Jeff Wilson had some brutal moments, like fell down on a route, right? Like there's just some stuff that, and then that snowballs when you're facing a great defense, because one of the hallmarks of a great defense is they take advantage of every damn thing that you do wrong, right? And that's certainly what the Niners did.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, we'll just keep an eye on that situation, what their plan is at offensive line. I certainly trust Mike McDaniel as a guy to keep things moving, like keep it in the right direction. So, yeah, that Chargers game, by the way, the Chargers defense, not exactly a, like probably on the other end in terms of intimidating group. I think Tua and these guys will be fine against that defense. My God. There's got to be some tough conversations going on in that.
You're so right to point out that, I mean, McDaniel seems like he would be like, he's the guy that would have the exact right attitude to get you through a season without, you know, extreme highs and lows, right? Like, and the NFL is a league where just every week feels like a referendum on, you know, your key players, on the, you know, there's a million people producing power rankings each week. And McDaniel, even though he seems a little like, I don't know, maybe I'm sure there's people who would find him, players with the Dolphins who might find him a little strange, little unlike any other head coach they've ever had. He seems like somebody who, you know, at the very least, I would enjoy playing for, where you're never too high or never too low.
Well, I saw Chris Long point this out on Twitter, like a clip of McDaniels on the sideline and, you know, telling players like, I effed up, like that's on me. Yeah. I effed up in the middle of the game. And he was saying, he's like, you just don't see coaches do that very often. Like, I know afterwards, obviously, a lot of coaches will, you know, Sean McVay watches these preseason boys go out there and run his offense on a weekly basis at this point. But every game after the media is like, I got to do better. I got to do this. I got to do, like, coaches do that with the media, but to do it in the middle of the game, like, I think that point from Chris was well taken, that like, he's just a good coach, by the way. Here's the take. Good coach, Mike McTain. Yeah. another non-surprising thing we've got in the outline here today. We've got a weird injury update from Pete Carroll. This is great. I mean, just beautiful stuff. Pete Carroll said that Ken Walker didn't sprain his ankle. He just, quote, jammed his ankle, called it an unusual injury. I think he said something too about, oh, we'll have to see what that's all about. Great stuff there. Now, it's possible Ken Walker plays this week, according to Pete Carroll, but they don't know yet. That sounds like the most Pete Carroll injury update of all time.
Yeah. I mean, how many players over the years has Pete Carroll said of them that they were doing great like weeks before they had to retire, right? You can just absolutely never take his assessment of an injury in terms of, you know, the actual trajectory of healing as any sort of gospel. It does sound a little unusual. The jammed ankle. I mean, we're accustomed to, you know, as far as ankle injuries go, fantasy managers are usually like, is it high? Is it low?
I don't have
a category for jammed. I don't know what to do with a jammed ankle. I know if it's a low ankle sprain, they can usually treat it and I'm not worried. I know if it's a high ankle sprain, I'm panicked. And is this going to cost him 4 weeks, 6 weeks? Is this going to be something that dogs him all season? I don't know what to do with a jammed ankle. The other thing I don't know what to do with is there's not a clear recommendation behind Kenneth Walker either, right? DJ Dallas also got hurt in this game, had to play through it after they tagged him as doubtful to return.
I know, Travis, interesting.
Yeah, Travis Homer already wasn't playing because he had a knee issue. He had, an illness during the week. We're also not talking about guys who are talents on the level of Kenneth Walker. You know, Tony Jones is kicking around there at his usual, like, sort of 2 yards per carry. I think he got banged up as well. So, like, there's not another option here. And I don't know if they can grab a guy off the street. I don't know if we'd feel any better about a guy off the street. But there's nobody else in this picture who looks anything like Kenneth Walker. So we definitely need Walker back.
Yeah, and I thought DJ Dallas actually made for a good stash going, just because I thought he'd be the clear backup. But yeah, the injury in that game certainly muddles things. Yeah, it was like, oh, he's not, like, he's doubtful to return, and then he was back there. It's like, oh, okay. All right. You know, Tony Jones, yeah, that's a perfect way to describe old Tony Jones there, by the way. So I think Dallas, we'll talk about Dallas a little bit later, everything. He makes for an interesting pickup, but... yeah, not great. We do need Ken Walker back. Ken Walker, by the way, been struggling a little bit too. Like, it's not been the same.
Touchdowns have covered it up a little bit, right?
Touchdowns definitely covered it up, but the rushing explosiveness hasn't been there. You know, I know that people who break down running backs, you know, better than I do, certainly would say that he's like a bit of a boom or bust runner, Ken Walker. So it's just been a bit more bust than boom of late. Hopefully this injury doesn't hold him back too much, because he is certainly a fun player to watch. All right. Quarterback. We're going to do a little quarterback roundup here for some interesting little pieces of news here. And we can kind of pick which one we really want to dive in on here. For one, the Jets say they're going to start Mike White again. That was just announced while we were taping. Yeah, no kidding. He's still a real NFL quarterback. We're going to keep on playing Mike White. The Panthers waive Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield. The 49ers signed Josh Johnson. There's a lot of dot connecting between Baker Mayfield and the 49ers, obviously, because he's been waived here, Andy. Please, no. I mean, please.
He also, I'm not sure the exact timing of him asking for his release, but it sure synced up with the 49ers injury to Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah, that's just really hard to imagine. Like the whatever team takes on Baker Mayfield right now, it's they've got to look at him as sort of a reclamation project, right? Like first of all, I wouldn't expect anything different from Baker Mayfield this season on a new team than what we've already seen this year. It's not going to be good, you know. He's not going to keep your offense on schedule. Nothing's going to prevent him from turning over the football. He's whoever your best player is, they're not going to be happy with Baker Mayfield. Like you're just going to get all the usual Baker Mayfield stuff. He needs like
by the way, the 49ers have like four good players. Right. Like any one of them could get angry. And but one of them has already experienced playing with Baker Mayfield this year, Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. So I just can't imagine them doing that. I actually think I don't know. Like I'm kind of looking past the Purdy era. I'm not sure how long that will last, but maybe Josh Johnson can get interesting. Like he popped up in a couple different places last year and had 300-yard games in both of them. If anybody that you've mentioned already is going to get up to speed quickly, it's going to be him. I just have very low expectations for Purdy. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe I'm too pessimistic. Maybe I just saw enough of him in college that it never occurred to me that he would be a pro or certainly a starting pro. I don't know. I'm ready to get past that era. But it can't be Baker. Like it just absolutely can't be Baker. But I am also struggling to think of any other team that would take a shot on him right now. Would the Texans take a shot on Baker? I don't know. The Colts aren't going to take that on amid everything else that has gone wrong for that team. I just have no idea.
I mean, the Rams have kind of, obviously they should be giving up on the season, but I could see them claiming Baker Mayfield just to, I don't know, because I think they got to think about the future a little bit.
Just to be jerks to the 49ers in case
that's another thing too, right? Just despite the 49ers, maybe the Rams pick him up. I don't know. Yeah. I could see the Seahawks maybe picking him up because there was that, you know, there was a connection there in the offseason. It seemed like there was some interest, but yeah, I mean, I do remember when when Baker is like, oh, I'd love to play for the Colts, and the Colts were like, yeah. No thanks. Frank Reich's no longer there. I don't know what old Jeff Saturday thinks of Baker Mayfield. Maybe we can look back through his tweets and figure out what his evaluation of was Baker Mayfield. But by the way, a lot of these teams will make a decision on Baker Mayfield based on what they thought of him as a prospect, because that stuff it takes forever to get that out of people's minds. Now, to be fair to Baker, not that I really want to be fair to Baker, but to be fair to him, his best years came in like a Shanahan style. His best year, 2020, came in a Shanahan style offense when all conditions were perfect with a great running game. This running game actually hasn't been that great. McCaffrey's been great in fantasy as a receiver, so I just don't think the fit's there. I don't know why I just don't think he comes in and makes you any better than Brock Purdy. Like, what has Baker Mayfield put on tape the last 2 years that would make you think like, oh, he's gonna be better than Brock Purdy, who at least he ran the offense. Purdy ran the offense pretty well in his relief duty for Jimmy Garoppolo. Now is in really positive game script, but like that's all you need is a guy to kind of keep the train on the tracks at this point with this offense, because the players are so good and the defense is so good.
Yeah, the best thing we can say about Purdy right now is that he has months in the offense, right? which like Baker Mayfield learning your offense on the fly and then getting up to speed in a couple weeks just seems like an absolute pipe dream. Like it's something that can't possibly happen. Just brutal.
He's also
brutal
a pain
spot.
In the ass too. That's another thing too. He's like, he's gonna attract attention. Like that's why the Browns, the big part of the reason apparently ironic's not the right word, but a little ridiculous that then they obviously go on to Deshaun Watson, right? Like that they didn't like that Baker Mayfield drew a bunch of attention to himself and was, you know, on social media chirping with the haters and stuff like that. Again, it's ridiculous then that their solution to that was, well, let's go trade for Deshaun Watson. Certainly won't be any negative attention there. But you know, with Baker, like that's part of the experience. I don't know why any team would want that in the middle of this year, especially when he's played as poorly as he has. I don't know.
No, it also feels like a situation if you're adding him, you've got to add him with the intention of starting him, because otherwise it's just a massive distraction and people are, you know, I don't know how much coaches and players really care about being asked the same things every day, but Baker Mayfield being in your locker room when your starter is Brock Purdy is just going to be a discussion topic absolutely every day until he plays.
Yeah, no fun. Last thing in quarterback roundup here. By the way, maybe the Falcons could claim Baker Mayfield. I tend to doubt it. Don't think he and Arthur Smith would jive well. But Falcons coach Arthur Smith said that, quote, "We'll evaluate everything, every job," when asked about the possibility of Desmond Ridder getting some starts. This is notable because it's even though this isn't like a rousing endorsement of Desmond Ridder, I can't tell you enough how much Arthur Smith, whenever he's been asked about Desmond Ridder as a person that exists this year, even dating back to the offseason, has been like, you know, his usual cantankerous self. So to say we'll evaluate everything as his team heads into a bye, I think there's a pretty good chance Desmond Ridder starting for this team on the other end of the bye.
Yeah, that's exactly the sort of soundbite that usually precedes a change, right? I fully agree with you, and it just can't get much worse.
It can't, dude.
Marcus Mariota's had some moments fantasy wise, but there's always just there's a crushing turnover every game. There are missed opportunities every game, and they're obviously coaching around him right now, and not necessarily coaching to maximize his talents. They have some damn good receivers who are just going to go underutilized. So whatever they're seeing from Ridder in practices, I don't really see how it can be much worse than what they're getting on the field.
Yeah, and Ritter's a guy that can move a little bit. Like, he would be interesting, I think, just like Mariota was interesting from a fantasy perspective. But what we really care about is, can he actually get the ball to? And I know Kyle Pitts is obviously out for the rest of the year, but like, I would love to see some games from Drake London. You know, he's coming off a 12 target, 95 yard game. It would be great to stack a few more of those performances as he goes into the offseason. I don't know that Desmond Ritter's the answer. I know that some quarterback guys who really like Desmond Ridder in the draft process. So, and you're right though, it just can't get much worse than Mariota, who I think has been the worst like starting quarterback, non Zach Wilson, non Baker Mayfield division. Like, he's right up there. The offense is just a complete mess with him. He's so inaccurate, leaves so many plays on the field, as you mentioned. I think that Drake London is a guy that you should be optimistic about, just on the chance that Ridder comes in here and like can read the plays out. Like, that's pretty much like, why is Kyle Pitts and Drake London not getting the ball? It's like, the design plays to these like bit players work. But like, when you actually need to read the play out, you know, read the timing of the route out, like everything like that, it's a mess because Mariota's a mess, man. And I mean, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. Let's move to Sunday Night Football recap here. I mean, Andy, I'm not sure I've ever seen a game when like the flood, like the term the floodgates opened was more encapsulating for a performance than this one.
Right.
Cowboys 54, Colts 19. The Cowboys outscored the Colts in the fourth quarter 33-0.
I don't know that I've seen that. I can't recall anything like that, you know, where like at one point Matt Ryan had, I think he'd just thrown his third interception, and I was just like, that can't only be three, right? It felt like,
I know, I thought it was DeLome-esque, like his game against the Cardinals.
Yes, when he had, yeah,
you know, you know what I'm talking about. If you watch that game, you remember it. I thought it was gonna, like, the final stat line was gonna look like that. I was surprised as well.
Yeah, yeah. So a five turnover game that felt like, I don't know, felt like nine. It felt absolutely impossible for the Colts to move the ball late in that game. And I don't know, credit to them for, like, at some point that thing was 14-13 and you were entertaining the possibility that it was actually going to be a competitive football game. And then one side just absolutely detonated.
Yeah. And it just was a perfect picture of what I think the Colts are right now, is that they just have such a problem at quarterback. And like, they're a pretty good, they're a flawed team for sure. They're not a perfect team, but they're a pretty good team. You know, Alec Pierce is making some plays last night. You know, Paris Campbell popped up for a couple of plays. Michael Pittman had a couple of plays. You know, Jonathan Taylor, 21 carries, 82 yards. Mo Ali Cox, brutal fumble. He was the other one that had a turnover. But like, it's just Matt Ryan against that defense, like a defense that can send waves and waves of pressure at you. It was just at some point the secondary definitely started. You can tell when a defense smells blood in the water, and that was what it pretty much happened to them in the fourth quarter. But Andy, I don't really care. Like, you know, the broadcast talking about Sam Ehlinger, like, okay, Sam Ehlinger was like, they were not a real NFL offense. Like, they're a disaster prone offense with Matt Ryan, but they're in a very, very, very constricted offense. I still can't fathom why every broadcaster is so surprised that they can't really push the ball down the field whenever, because we've had them on primetime in back-to-back weeks, which that'll be enough of that already, thank you very much. But like, both Troy Aikman and Chris Collins were like, yeah, just are not pushing the ball down the field. I'm like, shoot, yeah, boys, I wonder why they're not doing that. But and then like, you know, at one point they pan to Nick Foles, who I guess is the backup quarterback now over Sam Ehlinger. It's like, I don't really care. Like, this is what the offense is probably going to look like, regardless of who is behind center at this point.
Yeah, do you think we'll see Foles at some point? Like that I was feeling a little bit uncomfortable for Matt Ryan. Like, Matt Ryan is probably at the very end right now. And I don't know, maybe that realization hit. Not that I'm some, you know, huge longtime Matt Ryan fan, but I respect his career and I respect his best years. And this is just quite a, you know, this is quite a final scene. If this is the final scene for Matt Ryan, it's really ugly. Like, it started for me with that Broncos game. That was just like an absolute joke of a game. And I sort of understood why he lost his job. He didn't necessarily lose his job to a better quarterback, but I don't know. We might as well see Foles, because this is getting really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Jeff Saturday, Colts head coach Jeff Saturday, in case you forgot, said after the game, or was asked like if Matt Ryan's shoulder injury is affecting him. He said, I don't think so. That'd be a question you'd ask him. And all honestly, I don't get into injuries with players. You know, I leave that to the trainers, et cetera, et cetera. Haven't asked him if his shoulder is hurting him. I bet his shoulder's probably still a problem, and I bet it will continue to be a problem as it gets pounded into the dust. I mean, I was surprised he only took 3 sacks. Because all of his sacks and all of his interceptions
look worse. That's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. I expected, again, like, you know, I'm not normally just having the box score up as I'm watching these games, right? Also, like, we're doing our recap podcast during Sunday Night Football, too. So I got to kind of keep an eye on that, you know, whatever. So when at the end of the game, when I go to write my recap piece on it, or, you know, lead my recap piece with this game, I was like, 3 sacks, 3 interceptions? It certainly felt like it'd be 5-5.
Yeah, no, it felt like 9-9. That game felt crazy. That was about as mismatched as, at least for a quarter or a half, as you'll ever see two teams. Like, if you've ever wondered what it would actually look like if like a Big 12 team faced an NFL team, I feel like it would kind of look like that. Just absolutely hopeless for one side and utter domination for the other.
Last note on the Colts, it was disappointing that Jelani Woods only ran a route on 27.5% of the dropbacks. After that, you know, I knew better.
This is just what the Colts are doing to us at tight end all year. Like, whoever goes off is guaranteed to give you a dud the following week.
Yeah, I knew better than to get my hopes up about it. Scott has said, like, the Colts would start 11 tight ends if they could, and he's right. You know, Kylan Granson runs around on 55% of the dropbacks. It's just like, I'm sure Jelani Woods, like, isn't a perfect technician, perfect player, or anything like that. But God, I mean, he gives him a little pop whenever he's out there. I knew not to get my hopes up about it.
He's absolutely huge. He looks like Jonathan Ogden out there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Let's talk about the good team in this game. Dallas Cowboys. let's put the Colts aside here for a second. Man, Dallas's offense is fun. You know, their defense is really fun, but you know, I came away from this game and you know, again, broadcast discussing Odell Beckham at every possible chance. I came away from this game feeling like, do they really need Odell Beckham? And like, I get Chris Collinsworth points about like, who knows how healthy he is. Like, they're just now getting their late season ACL tear Michael Gallup like back on track, right? With 2 touchdowns in this game. This team feels like it has absolutely everything it needs to make a Super Bowl run right now. You know, they got a quarterback playing at the height of his powers. I think Dak has played extremely well. I know he has the one interception in this game. Might have had another one. Topic for another day. Maybe Jeff Saturday should have thrown that challenge flag on that one. I think Pollard and Zeke are the best running back tandem in the NFL right now. And CeeDee Lamb, my God, CeeDee Lamb is so good.
Yeah, and the broadcast alluded to this. Like, they're doing fun stuff with CeeDee Lamb. Like, he's already a tough cover and they're making him a tougher cover, right? Like, he was in motion constantly. You never found him in the same spot on the field at the snap of the football. So that was really fun. Lamb was really fun to watch. You're right about the running backs. Like, for all the criticism that fantasy managers are giving Zeke, like, Zeke has been fine. Zeke is still, like, you know, nearly perfect on like third downs and fourth down. Zeke is a, like, get the tough yards for you guy, and Tony Pollard is a clear home run hitter, and that's a really difficult combo for anybody to deal with when you also have to worry about the receiving weapons that they put on the field. Credit to you and Chris Allen, who talked up Michael Gallup on Fantasy Football Live. And then he had a game in which he looked like Michael Gallup, right? And they're taking deep shots with him. And they also had the short end stuff on on which they scored. Like Gallup just looked great. He's barely over the roster percentage where we don't talk about him in the waiver pod, but he is somebody that you should probably look for because he's out there in, I don't know, it's something like 45% of Yahoo leagues right now. And he's one of those players that has kind of yo-yoed around a little bit in terms of roster percentage too, because we'll talk him up and we think he's had a game and then he puts up a dud and then everybody drops him. So he's just one of those guys where like some of the active managers out there have like added him, dropped him. So he is somebody who might realistically be available to many of you. And I agree. Like, I don't know how much better Odell Beckham, who's coming off a serious injury like last February, how much better can he be than Michael Gallup is right now?
Yeah, and I think the biggest problem with Beckham is that he's probably going to want like a multi-year deal. He wants to get paid. And like the 2022 Dallas Cowboys, like I'd rather just maybe find like a little slot receiver, you know, something like that. Because I agree, what they're doing with CeeDee Lamb right now is awesome stuff. But CeeDee Lamb has been everything he was cracked up to be this year. You know, there's definitely some doubters about CeeDee Lamb in the offseason. Like, okay, he's again, sort of like the conversation we had about Tua. Like, he's good, but how good is he? You know, can he be, he's a guy that's been like penciled in as the wide receiver 3 in Dynasty, you know, stuff like that. Does he really deserve that? Does he really deserve to be like a back half first round pick? And, you know, I said that he could lead the NFL in targets this year. He's 5th and you know, he's 9th in receiving yards. I mean, if Chris Olave has like a, you know, big monster game on Monday Night Football, as I'm saying this, he could totally pass him. But like, regardless, CeeDee Lamb's been everything he's cracked up to be. And yeah, like I think this was the first time that I could remember with CeeDee Lamb, I was like, they're really getting him in space. Like they used to do it with Oklahoma, man. Like he averaged over 10 yards after the catch per catch and had 23 yards on the ground as well. Like, that was great stuff. I think they finally figured what my big complaint with CeeDee Lamb the first couple of years was, like, they need to just settle on a role with him and like keep him in that role. If they keep him in this role, man, like the sky is absolutely the limit for him as a player. Where would you say, like, in real life NFL receiver terms? Cause this was, you know, PFF puts out the quote graphic, like, please engage with us, please engage with us. Or like the CeeDee Lamb is a blank and a top blank NFL receiver this weekend. I didn't engage with it, but I at least thought about it. Where would you rank him, like, in terms of real life NFL receivers?
He's not, it's not really breaking news to say that I don't think he's Devontae. I don't think he's, I don't think he's necessarily Stephon Diggs. He doesn't have the rare traits that Tyreek has. I think I'd put Justin Jefferson a cut above, Jamar Chase was just stupid against the Chiefs this past weekend too. So maybe that's a little recency bias, but I suppose I'm putting Jamar Chase in a different category. And then he's right there. So I don't know how many guys that I name. Is that like, is he the wide receiver 6, wide receiver 7? He's somewhere like just outside that top tier.
Yeah, I think there's a clear top tier of like Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, Stephon Diggs, Devontae Adams, AJ Brown, Jamar Chase. Like making a top 5 is impossible at this point because you'll feel like you left somebody off.
Right.
And then I think he mixes in with the next group with like, I think Terry McLaurin is there. I think CeeDee Lamb is there. Like those guys after that. There's, you know, Jalen Waddle, I think, is there too. That's sort of where, you know, Cooper Kupp. We didn't even mention his name because he's not playing right now, but I think he's in that group as well. So I probably somewhere, I always say if you make a top 5 receiver list and you feel like you didn't leave somebody off, you definitely did it wrong. Same thing with the top 10 receivers. Same thing, honestly, with the top 20 receivers. It's a great position. Yeah. It's pretty fun. That's why I'm kind of into it. But yeah, I feel like the Dallas offense right now really hitting its stride. CeeDee Lamb's usage is awesome. Michael Gallup's usage is awesome. Like the running backs are just outright dominant too.
Also, like coming into this week, this was a relatively challenging matchup. I mean, that's not a defense full of bums that they just worked over. And yet I still feel like if it had been a competitive game, like if Dallas's defense didn't take the whole damn thing over, there was a path here for CeeDee Lamb to have like, I don't know, 180 scrimmage yards, whatever they needed out of him.
Yep.
And significantly more targets than he saw.
By the way, next two games for Michael Gallup and CeeDee Lamb, Texans. Oh God, the Texans and the Jaguars. Like there's a lot of like Michael Gallup might get into that every week wide receiver 3 territory now that he's healthy. People just forget how damn good he is. Like through all this Beckham talk, it's like, hey, they already made the similar bet with Michael Gallup, and they're going to win that bet, by the way, because he's that good of a football player. So pretty cool to see. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. We will run through a minorly exciting, I'll call it a pretty exciting group of waiver options. All right, Andy, I got the people jazzed up by calling it a pretty exciting group of waiver options. So let's
incredible
start.
Tease, yeah.
Just incredible stuff. Hey, if you're looking to get into podcasting, hosting, anything like that, that's how you get the people excited, okay? Take notes. That's how you get the people excited. All right, running back, though, let's start there. There are definitely some dudes on this list that can help people, although you got Cam Akers to start here, Andy, and come on.
I was actually going to say the guy that I'm actually the most excited about and I think is the most interesting conversation is James Cook. I didn't see that game coming. And like, we know that Cook has been coming on a little bit, right? Like, it's kind of weird that it coincided with the Nyheim Hines trade that we thought was going to finish him off as a fantasy factor rest of season. But he's been really good for multiple weeks. And then like, boom, there's a 20 touch game. 20 touches, like six catches and 105 scrimmage yards is just automatic pickup kind of stuff. And we might have thought that was possible for Cook if there were a Devin Singletary injury, if like circumstances, weird circumstances, unfortunate circumstances led to it. I didn't see it coming just in the normal course of events, right? But he split snaps with Devin Singletary, looked great, was super productive. And it's Buffalo. He's the guy I actually feel best about on this list because, you mentioned Cam Akers. Cam Akers coming off a fine game for fantasy purposes, a couple of touchdowns, some tough yards, but not like Cam Akers at this stage is still, he's just not the flashiest player. It's not necessarily a fun watch. He's not the most efficient player, but, you know, he played over 70% of the snaps and he scored a couple touchdowns. So we have to talk about him. I'm way more interested in what we could get out of Cook, who is a gifted receiver now coming into a ton of work. Like, I didn't, the way they talked about him on draft night and the way I felt he profiled was just not as a guy that they would ever deliberately give 20 touches to, 25 touches to. I didn't think it was going to happen, especially again with a healthy Singletary, but it has. And now we have to think of him as a guy who in any given week is probably looking at least a dozen touches. And he's been on the field like in some big moments late in games too. So They obviously, even though he's had some struggles this year, like he's put the ball on the ground, he's had some whiffs, he's yet clearly not been in the spot that Josh Allen expected him to be in a handful of times. That happened in the Thanksgiving game, but they've stuck with him. And that was a great effort. Like they've invested a lot in him and he looked really good. And again, it's Buffalo. It's an offense that can go off in any given week. They've got it's the Jets game coming up and maybe that one is going to be low scoring. Not sure. It's Buffalo though, but you get to the back end of the season, you get to the fantasy playoffs and you're looking at a matchup with Chicago. He's like anybody who touches the ball for Buffalo in that game has a chance to go off. They've got Cincinnati, which, you know, Cincinnati's a pretty good defense that just played a great game. But they're sort of middle of the pack-ish and that is going to be a high scoring game in all likelihood. So there's some great spots for him. I'm super excited about James Cook. He's already exceeded my expectations.
I love that call. I agree that I think he's my favorite pickup at running back this week. Like the fact too that Devin Singletary pops in the goal line touchdown actually could, you know, if Cook had scored, he would be, I think, you know, people would be blowing their wallets, get everything. And he's a guy that like should have been stashed. Like he fits into the backup running back stash sort of philosophy anyways, because we know he's talented. Offense is good. You know, he's behind just one guy really in Devin Singletary. But, you know, as you mentioned, kind of pops him up. 40.5% route participation for James Cook, you know, 42.4% of the team rush attempts, 40% targets per route run. Like those are all the things you really want to see for like signaling a breakout. So I love the James Cook recommendation. I think he should be on rosters anyways, but if he's going to have standalone value, like, oh boy, wheels up. And wanted to read this off from our mutual friend, John Daigle, tweet I saw this morning. Reminder to ignore the Rams and let your league mate guess LA's weekly leader in running back touches. Every week this season, week one, Daryl Henderson, 86%. Cam Akers, week two, 63%. Week three, Akers, 75%. Week four, Henderson, 55%. Akers, week 5, 75%. Week 6, Henderson, 58%. Week 8, Ronnie Rivers. Come off his I got a Led Zeppelin record behind me. He came back off tour. He came back to get 52% of the team rush attempts for LA. Then week 9, we're back to Daryl Henderson, 60%. Week 10, we're back to Daryl Henderson, 41%. Oh, then Cam Akers, week 11, 58%. Kyron Williams, 64%. Week 12, then Akers this week at 86%. I just thought that was hilarious. What a mess, right? I don't know. I could easily see Kyron Williams being at 64-70% next week.
Oh, totally. It's in play. The appeal to, you know, if you can make the case for investing in Rams at any level, it's that they've got, you know, first of all, they've got the Raiders coming up, and hey, the Raiders have been pretty good lately. But then they've got Green Bay, an incredibly friendly run defense. They've got Denver, and then they've got the Chargers in championship week for fantasy purposes. So, like, if you do guess right on the Rams running back in week 17, that could be profitable. That could be a winning move.
That feels like a protect your energy type of thing. Like, don't be sitting there week 17 and just like when Cam Akers has 5 rush attempts and Ronnie Rivers comes out with his damn tambourine or whatever, you know, he comes out there and he's got a, you know, 25 rush attempts or whatever against the LA Chargers. Feels like a protect your energy thing. Anything else here at running back before we move to wide receivers?
Yeah, I think the other names that that deserve at least honorable mention. I don't even know how to discuss Zonovan Knight exactly, because we talked about him at length last week. But we're in that type of, like, we're at that point in the season where I feel like the waiver wire gets a little bit less active, and there's teams that sort of drop out of the running in leagues, and so we're just hitting those weeks where, like, roster percentages don't move as much as they would have in October and September. So I don't know that Zonovan Knight is really still available in a whole bunch of competitive leagues, but he is only attached to rosters in like 47% of Yahoo leagues right now. So he's eligible for this conversation. And I thought he had a sort of consolidation of power game, right? Like he saw 20 touches, goes over 100 yards, was, you know, and again, it's important to remind people, like, the week before, he wasn't just a function of Michael Carter getting injured, because he was getting run while Michael Carter was in the game. So they clearly intended a role for him. They had Robinson inactive for a reason, because they wanted to get him out there. Now, Knight does not have a great matchup in the week ahead. He's got Buffalo, but then it's Detroit, then it's Jacksonville, then it's Seattle. Those are some exploitable matchups. And again, any running back seeing, you know, who has the potential for 15 to 20 touches is somebody that you're going to want to have on rosters. Other guys that are going to be mentioned in the column, Chuba Hubbard, just a reminder that he had 17 carries, didn't do much with him, but 17 carries before Carolina's bye. If you want to avoid Carolina altogether, however, I get it. I totally get it. Jordan Mason turned out to be the answer in San Francisco for who was going to run behind Christian McCaffrey. It was not TDP. It was not Tevin Coleman. Mason had over 50 rushing yards in that one. So, like, if you scooped up any of those other guys as flyers, I think you can drop them. I think Mason is the answer there. And then we've already discussed the Seattle backfield. I'll be honest, I don't really know what to do with it. DJ Dallas, I suppose, would be my priority. I wouldn't throw a huge waiver offer at him. And this, we don't even know how many games Kenneth Walker is going to miss with his jammed, not sprained ankle. and then DJ Dallas got hurt in the same game, and they had to roll with him because Walker couldn't return. So he wasn't particularly efficient. It was a week in which they didn't have Travis Homer because Homer is dealing with illness and injury. So I don't know that they have a healthy running back right now. And I don't know that you really want to play. They're about to face Carolina, which, you know, for all the problems that the Panthers have had, the defense is often pretty respectable. So I don't know that we can expect a big game from any Seattle running back, but still, these are probably the guys that you use as like your fine. Like, if you set 6 waiver claims, these guys are probably the 6th, and you're throwing a dollar or two at them.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The schedule is not great, but the offense that you can be attached to is awesome. So there's a give and take there with the Seattle backs. Wide receivers. Hey, Andy, your first guy here is Nico Collins, and we did it. We finally willed Nico Collins into the end zone. It only took 10 Kyle Allen targets, which I mean, enough already with Kyle Allen. But it took 10 Kyle Allen targets to get there, but we did get that touchdown on Nico Collins.
Yeah, it's I keep sort of pounding the table on all these targets that Nico Collins is seeing, but of course they're not the highest quality targets, right? They're Kyle Allen targets, yeah. And they're a bit fake
news targets, that's for sure.
Yes, exactly. They were Davis Mills targets before that, so they're not, you know, these are not premium targets necessarily, but they are, you know, he is routinely seeing like 7 to 10 targets. Now, is he converting those into like 35 to 45 yards? Yes. Yes, he is. Yeah. They're not doing all the things that you would necessarily want done with an athlete like Collins, right? Like, again, I feel like we discuss him every week at some point. Guy's 6'4". He's got 4.4 speed. He can leap out of the gym. Like, this is an athlete who has special traits.
He's
like,
good too. I think he's a pretty good player.
Yeah. So 10 targets is really encouraging for a guy like that. If he ever saw 10 targets from a good quarterback, I think he would do really fun things. If they took the appropriate number of deep shots with Nico Collins, I'd be really excited. But he did find the end zone, and I just really like the player. He's got Dallas coming up. That's not great, but then they've got, but
the fact
you know,
that they play the Cowboys next week and you have that on the outline did literally just sent a shiver down my spine thinking about Kyle Allen going against that defense.
I also feel like there's going to be a number of games, you know, like the one that Houston just played, where like the touchdown might occur late. A lot of the yardage might happen late when defenses are a little bit more forgiving, perhaps. Not that Dallas was forgiving late in their game against the Colts. But they've got Kansas City coming up after that. They've got Tennessee, which has been an okay matchup. Jacksonville in championship week. So there's a couple of decent spots for Collins. Not next week, but there are some decent spots for him. And I think he's a really good player. Other names on the list, you know, it's one of those things where, like, because we have this stupid 6-team bye week ahead of us in week 14, which is just unfair, you know, some of the most interesting players who popped up are headed immediately into byes, so they can't help you. And you probably desperately need help right now. But Alec Pierce had a game in a nightmarish Sunday nighter for the Colts. Alec Pierce did have a game. It was his third game this year with over 80 receiving yards, had a touchdown, and like just like an out-muscled defender for the touchdown too, right? Like just kind of a jump ballish situation that you can run with Alec Pierce, and he's going to win a lot of those. So that was good to see. Jahan Dotson finally popped, had 9 targets, returned to the end zone in that sort of weird tie with the Giants, but that was really good to see. Again, not that you can do much with it because they're headed into a bye, but then they've got the Giants on the back end of that too when they come out of the bye. So maybe there's something there. Other guys who I think are less interesting, but still moderately interesting. Corey Davis had a decent game. And again, with Mike White running that offense, you're gonna see, you know, not that Mike White is any sort of secret superstar. He missed some throws, but he will keep your offense on schedule. And they let him, you know, shoot. They let him put the ball in the air 50 plus times. Yeah. That was fun.
Throwing the piss out of the ball at this point there with Mike White.
By the way, we don't have a lot of occasion to talk about Garrett Wilson on the pickups podcast necessarily, but oh my God, there were some routes where he did everything to the defender short of like filling out their retirement papers for them, right? Like he cooked some people. You could see like Patrick Peterson's soul leave his body a couple times. Like, yeah, that was awesome. That was great to watch. That guy's I've liked him. I was probably behind most people coming into the draft process, but that guy's a star. That guy's an absolute star. He looked incredible. And it really says something that he has blown up with any quarterback they throw out there other than Zach Wilson. So what a game. Like probably, I don't know, that was as impressed as I was by any individual player. Was just getting through that game this morning. Wilson was phenomenal, but I've sidetracked myself because you can't pick up Garrett Wilson. That's not an option for you. But maybe Corey Davis is available to you.
It's nice when we get you to talk about like some non-goofball level play.
It is nice to occasionally hit it. Oh my gosh, Garrett Wilson was good. Isaiah McKenzie still out there, still tied to Buffalo. That's
yeah,
kind of
right.
Fun.
Like you just went from Garrett Wilson, Isaiah McKenzie. I know. And I feel for you, Andy. I feel that you've become the pick. It's like we need to get Andy back on the preview pod so that we can talk about somebody who's not Isaiah McKenzie with Andy.
I know at one level, like as a fantasy guy, you're like, oh, I only want to talk about the deep names. I don't want to talk. Everybody knows the stars. But then like you're talking about the deep names and you end up talking about Trent Sherfield. And how interesting is that? Not
tell
very.
Me about it. Tell me how interesting.
when there's actual great players out there that we could be talking about, like Garrett Wilson. But Trent Sherfield could be a thing against the Chargers because Jalen Waddle's a little bit dinged right now. And obviously he had a splash play. He's found the end zone a couple times this year, and Tua obviously likes him.
Yeah, definitely a splash play, although there was a revenge game, so don't forget that. What a Sunday. What a Sunday for revenge games, Andy. Got to be an all-time revenge game Sunday.
I don't remember one with that many, but like people were putting together all kinds of lists of, but you could always think of more, right? Like, and Sherfield was one of those guys too. There were so many revenge narratives out there. And A.J. Brown actually had some quotes following the game to suggest that it did mean a little something to him. Like he kind of fed the revenge narrative people a little bit.
So did Malik Hooker, like after the Sunday night game, because he was drafted by the Colts. He returns a touchdown for him. He's like, yeah, I want to show that I'm still the guy that that was drafted. Like, and I think I did it right, in this game. So of course it's a real thing. Okay. If you're a hyper motivated athlete and you don't think like, oh, especially for A.J. Brown, like this team that, he tweeted after the trade, like, Titans fans, this was not my fault, whatever. Like, he, and again, you can litigate the history of whose fault is it really, whatever. But clearly, in his mind, he thinks the team wronged him or didn't give him what he deserved, which, by the way, he's deserved what the Eagles gave him.
He deserves
him,
it.
Yeah. So, you're going to use that as motivation, just like anybody else would, okay? Like, these are not robots, okay? These are not numbers on a spreadsheet. These are real human beings. Like, the idea that that stuff doesn't come into play, or motivation or coaching or these intangible effort, these intangible factors don't come into play. If you think that doesn't affect your fantasy football outcomes, you're insane. Okay.
Plus, so that's, these guys are really good at just sort of inventing rivalries to motivate themselves where none should exist, right? So, like, how do you think they are when there is a real reason to have a chip on your shoulder?
Right. When some player says something like, oh yeah, you guys will do, the media will do this, the media will do that, and like, just add it to the bulletin board, and then an actual thing like that happens. I mean, Steve Smith went against Panthers and he literally said, I'm going to leave blood and guts on the field, which, by the way, he did in that first game against the Carolina Panthers. So yeah, definitely a real thing. You know what else is real, Andy? Jared Goff's quarterback efficiency at this point in the Detroit Lions offense.
I wish I had more quarterback names for you people, because everybody's got a need this weekend. Again, it's not just the buys, it's the number of injuries that we had. But I think there are two pretty clear names that are of great interest to me. The first of them is Jared Goff. And part of that is that it's Minnesota on deck. And we've talked about this a time or two, but like, Minnesota's been opportunistic and they've taken the ball away from teams. They're good at that. They give up a million yards. They have ranked dead last against the pass for the past couple of weeks. They are giving up over 8 yards per pass attempt. There is yardage there available for the taking against the Vikings. I think Jared Goff can get it. Like, he's going to have some weird hiccup moments along the way in all likelihood. But he's surrounded by phenomenal talent, right? He's the guy throwing to Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's the guy who gets to throw to DeAndre Swift. They're getting talent back with Jameson Williams. I don't know exactly what they'll do with him. They did very little this past game, but they did get his feet wet. So he's got weapons. DJ Chark is playing played really well in week 13. And again, this matchup is fantastic. Goff might be gone in a lot of leagues. He's right around 50% rostered right now, so he might be gone in your league. But he's also one of those guys who's been bouncing around, He's probably been on like four different rosters this year, because he's an easy guy to talk yourself into during a bye week, and then he's an easy guy to talk yourself out of, right? Like, you're not going to hold Jared Goff all year. This happens to be a good spot for him. It's in the last of the big buys, so I think he's plenty interesting. I would prioritize him ahead of Tyler Huntley, but I am a little bit interested in Tyler Huntley because the reasons that we discussed before when we were talking about Lamar. He'll run the ball. Four starts last year, and he rushed for over 40 yards in all of them, had over 70 rushing yards in a couple of them. We absolutely know we're going to get a rushing contribution. And then the schedule through the end of the fantasy playoffs is great. I don't know how long he's going to be the Ravens quarterback, at least a week. He's going to get Pittsburgh, then he's going to get Cleveland, Atlanta, Pittsburgh again. That is just not a murderer's row of defenses. So that is something that I would think Huntley could take advantage of. And I'm sure that Lamar can take advantage of it when he returns.
I definitely agree that Jared Goff, I'd prefer him if I'm in need at quarterback. You know, if I've been, Aaron Rodgers is like your QB2 in a super flex.
Yeah.
I have Aaron Rodgers as my QB2 in my super flex dynasty league. I wish I had Jared Goff around. By the way, Jared Goff has been like the subject of football Twitter this morning, which I've just checked in on here and there. Again, not participating because I like my life and I like my sanity. Jared Goff is like a perfect example of how dumb people are about quarterbacks. Like a quarterback can just be fine. Okay. Like he doesn't have to be great. He doesn't the numbers can lie to you about a quarterback like Jared Goff with like the efficiency and all this sort of stuff. But at the same time, he can be not trash. Like it's fine for Jared Goff to just be okay. You know, like if he can be like, the Detroit Lions have a good situation. The offensive line is good. Amon-Ra St. Brown's a baller and they've got dudes coming back. Like this is don't try so hard to make it like controversial that Jared Goff is productive. Of course he's productive in this situation because like we think there's good coaches there in Detroit, like, and they've got good players, and Jared Goff isn't like Baker Mayfield bad. He's just he's just fine. He's fine.
Yeah, no, he's part of a huge middle ground of quarterbacks who, by the way, deserve their money because there's not even, you know, there's not even enough of those guys to go around necessarily in the NFL. And Goff has always struck me as somebody like if a defense puts extreme heat on Jared Goff, he's probably going to do something funny along the way. But that's that's most guys, right? Like that's almost every quarterback. Very few of them can be like insanely creative and wriggle themselves out of situations that almost no one could. Like there's, I don't know, what are there four, five like truly elite quarterbacks, but we want to have the conversation about these guys as if you're either just elite or you are an absolute trash bag that the franchise has to move on from. But it's never that easy. Because everybody's chasing those elite guys, and there's just not enough to go around.
Yeah, I feel like the Rams dumping Goff in such a harsh public fashion probably made like everybody count Jared Goff's flaws against him twice, like counting them twice against him, which is pretty unfair. Speaking of unfair, Andy,
plus
if you need help,
he also came into the league with this idea that like he was just a puppet on, you know, Sean McVay's outstretched hand, right?
Yeah,
like,
totally. Immediately, that was the narrative. Yeah, he's definitely been like a narrative defined quarterback, but yeah, he's just a perfectly like average starting quarterback, and that's fine. Like that's fine for him to be that guy. Speaking of unfair, Andy. The tight end position has been very unfair for us in fantasy. We're running long here, but do you have any quick solutions here at the tight end position for the people out there?
This is one where I actually think the most interesting guy is probably Daniel Bellinger, because he was getting interesting early in the season before the eye injury, and the eye injury was plenty scary, right? Like he had double vision for multiple weeks, facial fracture. So that was worrisome, but he came back. The double vision is gone. And caught all five of his targets against Washington. He was a guy who, like, in his final full game before the injury, played like 90% of the snaps. Like he wasn't coming off the field. And now he returns to the Giants at a point where they just have a desperate need for receiving talent. And so I kind of feel like Daniel Bellinger's best games are ahead of him. Best matchups are ahead of him. He's got Minnesota coming up during the fantasy playoffs. That's a really friendly spot. So got a couple of deep leagues where I've added him, and I'm content with it. I am no longer seeking, like, you know, whichever tight end just happened to go off. Like, I think Bellinger can be good from here on out. Other guys that I think can be at least helpful to fantasy managers, Evan Ingram had a nice enough day. He's got Tennessee coming up. Noah Fant found the end zone. He's got Carolina coming up, and then a couple of really thorny matchups. He's got San Francisco out there still. You know, I probably got to mention Greg Dulcich, even though he had appeared to flatline. He came up with 6 catches, 85 yards, which within the context of like Denver's passing game is like a miraculous achievement.
Yeah, for real. And no Courtland Sutton now for probably a couple of weeks of the hamstring injury. So
yeah,
it should just be, I mean, I guess Greg Dulcich is probably my favorite guy on this list. So if he's out there, I do like that one. Let's move into drops, Andy. You mentioned TDP. I think it was kind of surprising to me that people thought there was any clarity that like there, like as to who the 49ers backup running back is. Now there was not heading into this week.
Yeah.
Now there is, and it's Jordan Mason, not TDP. So I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, we had to reach all the way back to week 2 to come up with a reason why it might be TDP, right? Which in the NFL, that's just forever ago. That might as well be like, you know, something that happened in like the 80s, right? Like week 2 is your different team. And so evidently that had no relevance, and Jordan Mason was the guy. So like any other flyer you took on a San Francisco back, you can cut him loose. And the other guy that I would just mention is James Robinson. Like I did come into week 13 in two leagues that are, they're real, real deep. One of them is 16 teams. One is 20 teams. And I kept James Robinson around, just wondering if he would have any sort of role. He barely had a role. Like it was pure like, rotational supporting Zonovan Knight. Like that's Zonovan Knight's job right now.
Totally. For me, it's Brandon Cooks and Daryl Henderson. Daryl Henderson, as you know, no longer plays for the Rams, plays for the Jaguars. He was a healthy scratch with Travis Etienne out there. So he's purely like he might be worth stashing your 20 team league, might, just in case Travis Etienne gets hurt. But even then, pretty big stretch. I think you could drop him if you held on to him as any sort of like potential backup, you know, stash option behind Travis Etienne. And Brandon Cooks, man, I know it feels weird to cut the name Brandon Cooks, but like he's hurt. All that stuff we said about Nico Collins with Kyle Allen applies to Brandon Cooks, except like Nico Collins is A, healthy, and B, in some sense, at least in a maybe perhaps a less public sense, isn't like wants to be with the Texans. We know Brandon Cooks
he's not currently mad that he's a member of the Texans. Yeah,
I mean, he's probably not like happy about it, right? Like I think if he allowed his mind to wander and was like, I'd love to play for another NFL team, he's not actively pissed about it and letting other folks know publicly, at least. Maybe Nico Collins is talking to a family member or two, and you know, a friend, and saying, you know what, it'd be real nice if I played for the Chiefs, right? Like that would be really cool. But he's not like he's not actively wish casting it into the universe like Brandon Cooks is. So
yeah, he's looking at Justin Watson's routes and his job, and he's like, how do I get there?
I think he'd take less than that, honestly, at this point. But yeah, so I think like even if Brandon Cooks comes back and he has like a couple of games, who cares? Like the upside is maybe 70 yards and a touchdown. Let somebody else have that. You can go ahead and like stash a backup running back, stash a wide receiver who might get loose. I think you can just go ahead and cut Brandon Cooks. Let's move to hold on loosely here, Andy. You mentioned Jeff Wilson earlier. He's my pick for this one. Frustrating game, weird game, but I still wonder if there was a bit more of an injury question there than we thought. Like, remember he got hurt in that Texans game and like Tyreek Hill kind of scooted him off the field very strangely. And then we didn't really hear much more after that. I just wonder if there might be an injury situation there, but I'd hold on to him just to see if anything changes for next week.
Yeah. He also just like, he had a couple of ugly moments, relatively early in that game as a receiver. And I feel like Miami just gave up on the idea of running the football, right? Like Raheem Mostert had more
carries. Get the Chargers next week though.
Yeah. Which is what I'd been eyeing on all the teams that had, like, I started Jeff Wilson. I'm embarrassed by the number of leagues in which I started Jeff Wilson. I lost in all of them, I'm sure. This is just a bloodbath week for me. My hold on loosely guy was George Pickens. He's another part of the failure that was week 13 for my fantasy portfolio. I'd certainly talked myself into him having a huge week against Atlanta. The guy makes like just a mutant level catch every week, and then was barely targeted in week 13, which was kind of outrageous. And he wasn't too happy about it afterwards, which is we'll see if he gets the diva receiver treatment and gets fed in the week ahead. Mike Tomlin doesn't strike me as somebody who would be particularly eager to do that for a rookie, but we'll see. He's a huge talent. We know that. So I can't cut him loose. Perhaps there are leagues out there where, I don't know, you got eight teams and you can't really wait on a guy. I'm not cutting loose George Pickens because I just think he's an insane talent.
2 yards. I wish I had the stones to take the under on when you threw the or was you or Tank threw that out there on Fantasy Football Live, because I was in on Deontay Johnson, which were like he miraculously got 60 yards right and hit the over on his prop. What a miracle on that one. But wish I had the stones to take that. Yeah, somebody sent me in my Discord sent me the clip of him, George Pickens, not being happy about the lack of, and for a couple of reasons. One, because I am on hyper alert as to like who's the second year receiver that I can't get myself too high on, because they're going to go the way of Brandon Ayuk and Elijah Moore and like getting beef with their team. And George Pickens certainly seems like the good candidate. By the way, like I read the comments on that tweet, and like Steelers fans either feel like one way or another about it. Like And it's probably because they have like extreme Antonio Brown PTSD as to like, oh my God, please let's not find ourselves in that situation again. It's either like, yeah, George is right, get him the ball more, or like, oh my God, no, we've got another Antonio Brown on our, you know, so like it's funny to see how people react to stuff like that. But we'll see what happens with George Pickens next week.
Yeah, there's also so many people in that fan base who love Kenny Pickett too and are rooting so hard for Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, it's an interesting team, that's for sure. Please change offensive coordinators in the offseason. please. All right, last thing here, our Treviso Babes update. Unfortunately, I keep saying this, I had a long conversation with my mom on Friday. Again, we mostly talked about fantasy football for 90% of it, which is a new fun wrinkle in our relationship as mother-son, that most of what we talk about is fantasy football now. I told her, I was like, yeah, unfortunately, like, we're going to kind of stop talking about you guys because like, you're not that interesting anymore. Like the most aggressive drop in the league was Tyler Boyd. And like, I can kind of get, by the way, Tyler Boyd dropped the ball himself like on Sunday. Yeah. There's not. Leslie added Jameson Williams. I thought that was the most chalk ad of all time based on her her submission earlier this year on being a huge Alabama fan and also a fan of fast wide receivers. I'm like, yep, well, that one checks out. That's about all the updates I have that are minorly interesting with Treviso Babes because they've gotten too sharp, Andy.
Yeah, no, I'm sure the people making moves right now are the most competent managers who've been the most attentive. Plus, they had, you know, they had the tutorial from you, right? And I'm sure
that was kind of the downfall. Yeah, out. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done like the 45 minute Zoom call I had with them, where ever since then it's like these Treviso Babes updates have gotten less and less interesting because they've gotten better and better at fantasy football. So all I really care about now in this league at this point, you know, sorry to the other babes who are listening, I just want my mom to make the playoffs. Like I again, it would be so embarrassing, and she's gonna be.
It is a bad look for you if Bev doesn't make the playoffs. Yeah,
it's a horrible look for me, and she's gonna let me hear about it. So, all I care about at this point is just let's get Bev. I don't care if she's the fourth seed, third seed, second seed, first seed, because there's only four teams going to the playoffs for whatever reason. She just got to make the playoffs. Okay, that's all I ask. I don't care if she wins it. I just care that she makes the playoffs.
Yeah, you can't be in that situation where like it's the year 2045 and you're sitting around the table at Thanksgiving and Bev is like, you remember in 2022 when I didn't make the playoffs because you didn't help me enough? Yeah, you don't want that.
That sounds about right. That's definitely my future. So we need her to make the playoffs. But Andy, that is going to do it for us. Glad you got to talk about a couple of good players along the way and not just your usual dust balls. We got a whole CeeDee Lamb section in there. Garrett Wilson pop for a second. Anytime you just want to talk about something at the top of the show that isn't, you know, here's the tight end that might disappoint you this week and the streaming quarterback that will certainly break your heart, you let me know and I'll put that thing on the outline. We are happy to have you talking about actual good players, Andy.
Oh my gosh, I almost timed it wrong. Like I'm not usually like game watching right before we jump on the pod, but I had, and like the last thing that I'd seen before we started talking was Garrett Wilson, and I was like, oh my God, this is all I want to talk about for the next hour.
Hey, I would have happily made the whole show an hour-long discussion about Garrett Wilson. To keep up with more of Andy's thoughts about actual good football players, maybe, no promises there, you can follow him on Twitter at Andy Behrens. You can also follow me on Twitter at MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, make yourself a better fantasy player and improve your timeline by following at Yahoo Fantasy. You will not regret it. Austin Eckler. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about the Chargers loss to the Raiders and a whole lot more on a beefy episode of Eckler's Edge. Until then, we're out.